6:19 p.m. and you're listening to KBUT's Community Matters. My name is Christopher Biddle, and joining us now is Nick Bolin, writer with High Country News. Thanks for being with us, Nick.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me.
And as always, my co-host Chris Rourke is with us, and I'm just going to hand it on over to Chris to talk with Nick right now about his reporting.
Sure. Well, first of all, Nick, what an amazing article you did. The in-depth reporting that you did, the research, you explained every nuance of campaign finance law. I cannot give you high enough praise for that article. And, you know, I should share with people, Nick and I have known each other a little while. I did some reporting on the same topic, and he and I had a discussion, I think when Senator Gardner, or former Senator Gardner, was in town at visiting Gunnison. And so, Nick, tell the audience a little bit about your interest in the story and really why you wanted to go into such in-depth reporting. It wasn't like installment reporting, like every week there's an update or every couple of weeks, you know, you're following the story and maybe doing an installment. This was something that you researched over months and then packaged into one big story. Tell the listeners about that.
Sure. And before I get into it, I should say that I was building off reporting that you did with the Gunnison Country Times.
Oh,
so yeah. Oh, it was we were a team there. So, you know, for readers who don't know High Country News Magazine, we're a monthly magazine that covers the entire Western United States. We have a small office in Gunnison. And you know, when I heard about the creation of the Super PAC in May and then got wind that Gardner was coming in July and then kind of all of these dynamics were colliding in Gunnison, it very quickly became clear to me and my editors that a lot of issues that were relevant to the region as a whole were kind of coalescing in the little Gunnison Valley. When I talked with my team about how to handle it, you know, they said, why don't you just follow it from the summer all the way to the election, talk to all the characters, report on everything that happens, and then tell a big long narrative after the fact. And that would be kind of the most useful way to handle the story, because, you know, in terms of influx of outside money, post-pandemic movement of people, income inequality, it was all kind of combined in Gunnison, and it ended up being a quite fascinating story, in my opinion.
You know, as you did the research, and of course you got a lot of people to talk to you who were somewhat reticent to talk to the press. What were the themes that you saw developing? How did you draw people out into telling you, you know, really their position on it? You included so many voices in this story, and you know, people think there's only two sides of a story. Maybe there are three sides to a story. There are multiple sides of this issue, and you were able to draw people out in such a way. But what did you see developing as you did the research?
Well, you know, it's something I've heard one of my editors say, is that you're done reporting a story when you ask at the end of an interview, who should I talk to next? And you only hear names that you've heard before. That's kind of how I handled this, is after every interview, just kind of bouncing off of it, asking for who should I talk to next? And, you know, I think when it comes to getting people to talk who might not always be interested in talking to the press, you always just kind of ask them to tell their story. Everyone has, you know, their own narrative version of things. And, you know, I guess it's our job as journalists to kind of synthesize those in the fairest way possible. But no, it was a lot of fun to both live here and be reporting on the story, because there were so many people to talk to. It was kind of a, got to kind of flex my old local journalism, local newspaper skills again, which was a lot of fun.
Well, that all comes from building relationships, and you certainly built a lot of them. Was there anything that surprised you along the way? I mean, what did you come away with it? What did you learn, or what did you go, huh, I didn't know that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the thing that most struck probably the thing that struck me the most as I was reporting the story was that, you know, when it comes to the second homeowners and, you know, the dependence on tourism and recreation in Gunnison County, you know, we hear a lot about how the area depends on their economic contributions, which is entirely true. You know, 60%, almost 60% of the income tax comes from people who don't have primary residences here. But I guess I was struck by the realization that the dependence goes both ways, that the fact that, you know, Gunnison has become a kind of playground. Like that's how businesses and you know, our local government has marketed us for decades. And it's been really good for Gunnison, but it also means that there's, you know, Trudy Vader hammered on this in the campaign, that there's this class of, you know, not very well paid service workers who the tourists and the second homeowners depend on to groom the trails and serve the drinks and make the food and do all that other stuff. And, you know, the dependence cuts both ways, but on that side of the relationship, you know, if you want to make a better salary or you want to, you know, get out of that, like there's not many other options and they get paid really poorly at times. And I think that aspect of that relationship of dependence doesn't get talked about as much as it should. So I was hoping that came across in the story.
You know, this PAC got very vocal and started making some statements in support of two of the candidates, Dave Taylor and Trudy Vader. But beyond that, in representing views of second homeowners and being as loud and vocal as they were, especially on social media, do you think it ended up hurting the candidates or hurting the second homeowners cause? I mean, I don't know that you can necessarily define that by the election count, but certainly there was a lot of talk in the community focused on it. And I don't know, what are your thoughts about how the PAC and its you know, being very vocal impacted the election itself?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, it's really hard to, you know, make any sort of, you know, guess about the vote totals, but, you know, I mean, it came up in every voter forum, you know, that I observed, and I think I observed most of them. And, you know, a lot of questions from voters. And I think that, I mean, that this was something, again, I noted in the story that one of the candidates said after the race is that, yeah, you know, with a super PAC, it's independent, right? The candidates can't control if they're being supported or not by a super PAC, but just that sense of association with a group that doesn't necessarily, well, I guess to put it plainly, was representing the interests of people who wouldn't have been their constituents if elected. I do think there was a sense that, yeah, it wasn't exactly useful.
Sorry about that. You know, it's interesting because there's discussion right now about PACs and about the large amounts of money that they collect, especially on a national scale. I mean, in this situation, I don't know that you can say this PAC collected all that amount of money to be influential, but there is discussion about, you know, putting some constraints on these groups because money tends to sway elections. And yet in this situation, we don't see that. What are your thoughts about where legislation is going, campaign finance, and any of those reforms? Do you think that this particular situation makes a case for that?
Well, like you say, it's kind of hard to relate this situation to the, you know, the super PACs operating in a national level, because they're operating in the hundreds of millions of dollars. But, you know, I mean, we're reporters, right? We want transparency. And the existence of super PACs does allow the wealthiest people in America to spend a great deal of money on elections and without a lot of public accountability or transparency, and often until far after the election's over. I'll be honest, I don't quite know where the kind of campaign finance reform legislation is right now, but you know, if it's in the interest of Yeah, transparency, letting people know who is donating money where. I mean, these are public elections. This information should be public. So, you know, I hope that it comes through. I'd certainly like to look at those records. I'm sure you would too.
Nick, this is Chris. If I may, I wanted to jump in, and I think that Chris Rourke and you have so much insight. You know, I only really paid attention to this story through the reporting that the two of you did, and it's interesting to hear you. I'm wondering, you know, talk about national context. Of course, most of your reporting was all done before the January 6th insurrection. That's the first time that I've said that on the radio. First time I heard it on the radio earlier this week, before the insurrection, after the insurrection. Obviously, an event that has changed the conversation on many levels, class, you know, politics, just American democracy discourse. In studying this microcosm, this political issue that you've worked on here in Gunnison County, do you have any insight into sort of how that event affects this conversation, or vice versa? You know, what are some thoughts you might have?
Well, you know, I think that, gosh, I mean, it's hard to know how the fallout from January 6th is going to play out. But, you know, I do think that, you know, when it comes to, you know, journalists and the press, you know, we were, I guess my personal thought is, you know, that we know that there was some targeting of the press in that event. And I certainly have colleagues who are, you know, cover right-wing extremism and say that, you know, that some of these groups that they've covered, they've never seen them quite this energized. So I don't expect, yeah, the energies that went into January 6th to go anywhere. You know, I guess I'm hesitant to say anything more definitive than that, just because I it's hard to have guessed that something like the storming of the Capitol could have happened. So, you know, I don't even know what where we're gonna go from here.
Nick Bolin is a writer for High Country News. His article, "When COVID Hit a Colorado County Kicked Out Second Homeowners, They Hit Back, How a Group of Non-Resident Homeowners Tried to Influence a Rural Colorado Election." It's available through High Country News. It is focused on Gunnison County politics here. And we so appreciate Nick Bolin coming on Community Matters. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Chris. And thanks, Chris. It was fun.
Thanks, Nick. Let's get coffee.
Deal.
All right.